Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. An ongoing story in St. Louis has been the issue of some absentee ballots cast in the 78th Legislative District in the August primary. Incumbent Penny Hubbard won the election handily. Her challenger, Bruce Franks, is contesting the validity of absentee ballots that might have made a difference in the outcome. He wants the results overturned. It's now before a judge. A grand jury will investigate. A St. Louis Post-Dispatch investigative team has been leading the coverage on this story. Stephen Deere and Doug Moore have been doing the reporting, and Doug Moore joins us in studio. Doug, nice to have you with us.
Thank you, Don.
Congratulations. You guys have done a great job, a good story, a good
story.
Yeah,
thank you. I appreciate that.
You know, I was thinking and reading a lot of your reportage that this is really a luxury many newspapers can't afford. The Post should be congratulated for letting an investigative team loose on a story like this. That's not happening in many places in the country.
Yeah, it was nice to be a part of that and to have that, you know, 100% support behind us for the time that we needed to spend nights and weekends reporting, the space allowed within the print version and online. And it was really all hands on deck. We had designers, editors, photographers all involved in really making it a solid package. And, of course, the reward for that is that we got amazing feedback, which tells me that there's still an appetite for that, that people want strong, sort of on-the-ground reporting that is breaking news in their community and telling them what's important. And, we're so used to sort of our Twitter world out there that we sometimes lose sight of what's important to our readers and our viewers.
You know, I wonder if the movie Spotlight had anything to do with the decisions by the powers that be at the Post-Dispatch. I mean, because it really brought to the fore the fact that, you know, investigative reporting is so important.
Well, I wish it was as sexy as Spotlight, you know, but maybe it could have. I mean, we still have some old school journalists in the newsroom that when they sniff a good story and they want to seek it out. And so Steve and I were given, you know, we spent about a week or so on this story now, and we're still going through documents and we still have some future stories planned. It's going to kind of see how this plays out with this decision in the Hubbard and Franks case, which we could hear about any time.
Yes, that is imminent. The testimony in the courtroom was over and done with. Now Judge Burleson will make
right.
a decision.
Yeah, yeah. After 2 days, he's listened to the witnesses and he's listened to the attorneys argue all of the very, very, very technical points of absentee balloting, and we could hear something any minute.
Do you have any sense as to where this might be going with the judge?
You know, I hate to always go on record as to what I think, but sitting through that, I do feel the judge has some serious concerns about some of the procedures and the policies that the election board did not follow. We can talk, you know, in detail about sort of the process of absentee balloting, but it does get very sometimes it's if you're sitting in a courtroom listening to this, it's like listening to paint dry. It's not something that a lot of people, if you don't vote absentee, you don't really think about that process. But there are several steps, and if you are missing any of those steps along the way, you can argue that that is an invalid ballot. And so the opponent of Penny Hubbard, his attorney, chipped away at sort of the integrity of the system and is like, this chunk of votes shouldn't count, this chunk of votes shouldn't count, and here are the reasons why. And the judge did seem to stop and ask a large number of questions to those that were on the stand to explain and re-explain their jobs, what they do, how those ballots are cast, what happens to them along the way. So if I had to make a prediction, I think he will overturn and ask for a new election.
And what happens then? A new election? Would that have to happen in November? Could it happen before?
It has to happen before because it was a primary election.
Right.
And so we're talking two Democratic candidates here. So they would have to – first of all, it is going to be appealed. Both sides have said
right.
whatever happens.
Right.
So once it has been appealed, if a new election is called for, they'll have to immediately do it within the next week or two because they have to – if you think about it, the absentee ballot – they can start casting absentee ballots for the November election as soon as September 27.
Right.
So we're really backed up against the November, and you've got to give people enough time to do absentee balloting again.
You know, one of the things that I've kind of wondered about throughout all of this is the fact there is a Republican candidate out there who is wading through all of this. It could make a pretty big difference. What is his name? Eric Shellquist.
Yeah, he was actually at the trial, sitting there both days. I didn't know who he was initially, and it's funny, Bruce Franks pointed him out to me, and Bruce is the opponent against Penny Hubbard. They're friends. He's friends with the Republican opponent, and he got 300 and some votes. And he
15% of the votes,
Yeah, he has run for office before. Mm-hmm. He's run for, I think, president of the Board of Aldermen and maybe Collector of Revenue. I can't recall the other one. He just thinks that in a city that is primarily Democrat, that there should be a second choice on the ballot. And so he's pulling for Bruce, he said.
You know, but this is important to him, I have to think. And it's clearly he's got a minimal chance of winning the election, particularly if he ran against an incumbent. But running against a relative unknown, he might have a little bit of a chance. So he's got to be wondering, where am I in all of this?
Yeah. I mean, he is to this point, he has not received a lot of ink. But you know, he's banking on getting a little bit more of that now. Yeah. And we are going to be writing a little bit about him, so at least people will know who he is. He's a really interesting character himself. So
he's a pet groomer, I think I read.
He is. Uh-huh. Yes, he is. And he is a grad student at SLU in urban affairs. He's a white guy who went to Harris Stowe. He's about 33. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't have that sort of politician fire in him, but maybe that's a good thing. But
this political season, who knows if it's good or not
true.
So good. You know, you mentioned the election board a moment or two ago. The board doesn't come out looking the whole process there doesn't come out looking really good in all of this.
Well, I would agree. They Dave Rowland, the attorney for Bruce Franks, decided to build his case on kind of chipping away at the integrity of the election board. You know, our investigation looked at more of some of the questionable voting that was done along the way, people who may have had their ballot cast for them or been misled on how to vote. But Rowland decided to go after the policies that were in place and the inconsistencies in how the election officials handled those ballots. And it seemed to be a pretty effective strategy.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll see how all that plays out. I'm gathering, I guess it's some of the material that you've been writing, indicating that they are at least talking somewhat about some changes in the process when all of this is over.
They are. I mean, they've already said they'll put one thing in place. For example, if you walked in your ballot or your wife's ballot or your kid's ballot, there is no log. There's no way of knowing who brought in that ballot, when they brought it in. So now there will actually be a stamp that would show who brought it in and when, which seems like a really common sense kind of paper trail, but they had not had that in place. St. Louis County does, so they're basically just borrowing the same process that they did.
Could I walk in my wife's ballot? I know this was an issue during the proceedings because Mr. Hubbard apparently at some point brought in ballots in the election in which his wife was running.
Yeah, we were told that, and Stephen and I, when we were doing our reporting, we talked to two former election officials who said that Rodney would come in anytime that there was a Hubbard, because the Hubbard family has several people that are in office right now, and he would bring in several ballots or someone from that campaign. The procedure is that you can bring in a ballot for someone in your family, so a husband, a spouse, a child, a grandchild, something like that. But you were only supposed to be able to bring in one, and he was bringing in, you know, trays of ballots. The Hubbards have not responded to our stories. Their attorney, Jane Duker, she's the attorney representing Penny Hubbard in this case, flatly denies that, said there's no way that would have happened. And then election officials say that wouldn't have happened either.
And then another part of the equation is the fact that are these ballots in envelopes or not, and what is included amongst the information required in the envelope?
Right. Because if you were just sending it in by mail, obviously they would send you your ballot and a return envelope to include that in. But if you walk it in, you don't need the envelope. But that envelope has a place to have a notary on there to say it's your affidavit that you're basically saying everything in here is true. But the way you can't possibly keep the envelope with the ballot when you vote because it's electronic. Even if you do it paper, it's still fed into a machine. So where's the envelope? There's no room for it. So the argument then by Bruce Franks and his attorney is then that envelope is the challenging mechanism. You can see if the signature's the same. You can look if the address there matches the one that's with the registration. And so they kept hitting on that, and that is what the judge kept asking the most about. He seemed to be very intrigued about that process and what you could, how would you legally challenge a ballot if you wanted to do so.
Yeah. Just backing up a little bit, how did you guys get onto this story?
It started off when Roland was asking the election board.
That's the attorney for Franks.
Yes, I'm sorry, Dave Roland, yeah. He sent he's this guy from sort of he's a libertarian, sort of anti-establishment. He's not your St. Louis attorney. He's from Mexico, Missouri, but he likes to take on the underdog as his client. And so he was asking the election board to investigate the history of absentee balloting when a Hubbard was in the race. He said, I have a client who's on the August 2 ballot. And they basically just, said, get away. We're not going to – that's too much work. There's nothing compelling us to do that. So then the election came. He lost. He won the election day votes, but he lost when they added in the absentee ballots. And so then they sued to get the records, and they were denied. Then a judge overturned them. And then that's at the same time we filed a Sunshine Law request. So we got the data dump at the same time that Roland and his client did. So there was a period of 2 days where we're sitting in this small room with Dave Roland and his client, Bruce Franks, and Steve and I are sitting there, and the election officials have to watch over us because they're unsealing ballots, and they don't want any of them to walk out of the room. And then we had copies of them. And so there's just hundreds of documents sitting around. So it's odd because we're on our phones reporting the story about the election officials who are sitting, a few feet away. And then next to the client so it's a very strange sort of setup for reporting a story, but it's the only way we could really do it. So they had a really good idea, or should have, where we were going with this story, mm-hmm. because every time we would find something, the good news is they were right there to ask, right? Mm-hmm. There was but they would also hear us on the phone with people talking, and there was really sort of no place to hide. So I guess we were being transparent in that regard. But that's how we got onto it and just kept digging and digging and finding out more.
And when did all of this start? How many weeks ago, months ago? Or
I guess the very first story that we did was in mid-July. Yeah. And then once we got the documents is really when it started. And that was just, a week or so ago.
So it all started before the primary, actually.
Yeah, it did. Yeah. It did.
Yeah. We were talking with Doug Moore. He is a reporter for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and he's part of the investigative team that has been working on the story we've all been reading and hearing about, and that is the absentee ballot situation revolving around the 78th Legislative District here in the city of St. Louis. We'll come back, continue our conversation with Doug in just a second. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our conversation with St. Louis Post-Dispatch reporter Doug Moore. Doug, you talked to an awful lot of people in advancing this story. Give our audience some sense of the kind of stories that you were hearing from people with regard to their absentee ballots and the questions even they had.
Sure. I mean, we were hearing that since we had the applications or copies of them, the phone number was often on there. So we could call them up, and then we have their addresses as well. We would ask them about, I see you filled out an application. Oftentimes that would be the opening line, is I see you filled out an absentee ballot application. Oftentimes they would look, what are you talking about? And then you would find out that they were like, oh, yeah, there was a campaign worker here came and they said that they were going to be filling out voter registration cards or job applications. But they didn't think they were filling out ballot applications. So then they said that a week or two would pass, and they would get their ballot, and someone would come knocking on the door and asking if they got their ballot. And they'd say, yeah, and the campaign workers that they said were part of Penny Hubbard's campaign would say, hey, you know what? We can take care of that for you. We'll just mail it back in. You don't have to worry about it. And in some cases, the folks said they just handed their ballot to them. They have signed it, handed over a blank ballot, and, of course, you're letting someone else fill it out. I mean, I would not do that, but some people, you know, just were – a lot of folks we're talking about here are elderly folks, folks who are living in this sort of housing co-op in Carr Square, which is just north of downtown, which, by the way, Penny Hubbard's husband runs as the executive director. And so they know the players there very well, and there's just this level of trust that, you know, you don't have to bother with going to the post office. You don't have to bother with anything like that. We'll just take care of it. So we were hearing a lot of allegations of, you know, people being asked to sign something that they didn't understand they were signing, and in some cases basically giving their ballot for someone else to fill out. And then, of course, those are sent in, and at the end of the election day, you know, Penny Hubbard has 78.5% of the absentee ballots. So,
which is an overwhelming number.
That is certainly a large number, yeah.
But she had an overwhelming, it was 90 votes. I'm thinking of our friend the Republican. That was, So there was a 90-vote difference, between her and Frank's.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So election day, the votes cast that day, Bruce got 53%, Penny had 47. But when you added in the absentee ballots at the end, she ended up winning.
And I think you would normally expect that the absentee ballots would generally be in about the same percentage as the other vote, wouldn't you?
Well, it really varies. I mean, there's different parts of the region, but, you know, it does raise a red flag, because historically, any time that they have run, whether it's been Penny or her husband Rodney, who is a committee man, or their daughter Tamika, who is an alder woman, anytime one of them is on the ballot, there are a disproportionate number of absentee ballots cast in those races. So that did raise some red flags, because typically the percentage of total absentee ballots is not as high as it was in this race.
Well, I guess one of the key questions to ask and ponder is, if in fact there was some hanky-panky going on in one legislative district, if this sort of thing isn't going on elsewhere in our area.
That would not be a surprise. there are high absentee ballots cast in other precincts throughout, you know, and not just in the city, but in the county. There are certain pockets of our regions where you see high absentee balloting, because folks have figured out that system. There's nothing wrong with absentee balloting. It's just there are strict procedures in place, and only six ways you can do it, and there's all the three steps you have to go through, and so if you don't follow any of that, then you can – as one law professor told me, there's a lot of room for hanky-panky, in your words, because it's the only time that a ballot leaves the eyes of an election authority, goes out through the mail to the person that may or may not have got it, and it comes back filled out by someone who may or may not have been the intended person to receive it. And the election authority has to rely on a lot of, you know, people saying, yep, that was me.
And perhaps the ballot is being brought into the election offices by a relative of the person who's running.
Yes, right. Yeah, yeah. Which you don't have a real hard and fast way of proving that, other than you just take someone at their word.
In the time that's left to us, Doug, circuit attorney is getting in on this now. There's going to be a grand jury. That's not yet been impaneled, I assume.
That is not, but they have started questioning people.
Right.
And so I think they're setting that up. You know, that obviously is a secret process. So.
Well, the feds are in on it too.
The feds are, yeah, the U.S. Attorney's Office is backing off and just saying they've reviewed it, but they're letting the circuit attorney take the lead on that. And then the Secretary of State's office is also doing an official review, because they have to, you know, they have to officially basically put their stamp on all election results.
So will a grand jury be impaneled regardless of what Judge Burleson's decision is today or whenever?
Right. The civil case will have no bearing on the possible criminal case.
And I wonder if that will be expanded beyond the 78th Legislative District.
There are rumors that it will be. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, that it's a little deeper than just the one race.
Yeah. All right. Anything else you want to add? What have we missed here?
No. It's keep reading because there's more stories coming.
Okay. Well, at least you're going to have Labor Day off.
That's
good news. That's good news for you.
I plan to, yeah.
Doug Moore, thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah,
congratulations,
Don,
again on the good work on
appreciate
your part
it.
And Steve's part and on the Post-Dispatch part.
All right. Thanks.
It's
appreciate
been
it.
A very interesting reading. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.